Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
Hello again, friends. Coming to you live from Vachon Island, Washington. This is the Brown Briefly podcast and weekly radio show radiating from the beehive of cultural awareness known formally as the Gene Bosch Voice of Vachon Broadcast Studio in the bustling and bodacious heart of our pastoral island community. That was the voice of our founder, Brian Brown, who, as we look back in our retrospective, we will see how he's influenced my life on Tuesdays for about the last 7 years or so. So we look forward to honoring Brian. Together, we strive to keep Brian's brilliant flame alive by bringing you weekly episodes of intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy, and always guided by Brian's mantra of less is more, more or less. Our Briefly panel includes our control board magician, Vachon Airport Commissioner, treetop flyer, and longest serving Briefly, Truman O'Brien.
Good morning. Happy to be here. I'm just thrilled to see the studio full of smiling faces this morning.
We have a crowd of Brieflies here, and I'm so honored that we all could all get together today. We also have, of course, historian, professor, down under aficionado, and now even more in demand than ever, our guardian of the galaxy, Bruce Hallman.
Good to be here.
Oh, it's just begun.
I think we're 24 hours in, so I'm glad you're working hard, Bruce. We also have legal beagle, mediator, Fulbright scholar, and former assistant attorney general, Craig Bellis.
Good morning, and I think a group of Brieflies is what, a bevy of Brieflies?
Yeah. I think so. And we may have some other adjectives as we go. Also, we want to honor our part-time political water transit miracle worker and full-time shenanigans coordinator, Amy Dreyer, who's probably listening from her perch in Hawaii, somewhere in the tropics, enjoying. Of course, we have sunshine here, so, no regrets. Myself, I'm Kevin Jones, mariner, backpacker, and I haven't flipped a quad yet, beginning Vachon Island Rowing Club member. And I was out the other day, and there was frost on the beach.
Oh, boy.
The water was, liquid. So we're good.
I think the key word there is yet. You haven't done that yet.
There's all new experiences
there
in
you
our
go.
Lives.
There
so
you
we
go.
All have to look forward to these things. Today we recognize a fateful day, but one which gives us Brieflies enduring motivation. The passing of our founder, Brian Brown, 5 years and 3 days ago today. To commemorate and honor the founder of this radio show and now podcast, we are joined by several Briefly Emirati, or Emirati, Emeritises? Emirati, I think is the right way to go.
Why are you looking at me?
I'm casting my gaze at Emeritus.
Lawyers are supposed to be able to speak Latin, right?
4 years of Latin, I can't remember half of it.
Okay, well, let's get on with the introductions. Poet, musician, former all-star shortstop for the Dixie Debutantes, and the person who famously penned a hopeful future event, United Citizens Overturned Citizens United, Lynn Kerrigan is here.
Hey, good to see you all.
Likewise. Island-hopping mystic muse and author of Hope, A History of the Future, Gail Kellner is zooming in from the islands to the north.
Good morning, everyone. Yes, I'm floating off the coast towards Canada.
Okay, in a good direction for many of us these days, I suspect. A fellow political activist, observer of truth, arbiter of insight, and really needs no introduction, Susan McCabe is here with us today.
Good morning. So happy to be here.
Likewise as well. Singer, sound effects expert, philosopher, Japanese maple enthusiast, and half a bubble shy of plum carpenter, Michael Shook, a.k.a. Chauncey Gardner, is joining us today.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It is a good morning indeed.
I'm looking forward to some sound effects. We haven't heard them for some time now on the Briefly, so, conjure up some greatness. All right, today's show would not be complete without our very special guest and longtime dear friend, Sheila Brown, Brian Brown's spouse. Thank you, Sheila, for being here today.
I'm very, very honored and touched and delighted in every way to be here. I have tears in my eyes. All these wonderful people who've known Brian so well, probably in a way that I don't even know him or didn't even know him. So this is just very sweet. And thank you so much, all of you.
Absolutely. We couldn't imagine a better opportunity to be together with you today and sharing some of our thoughts and experiences of our time together. And the relationships are so valuable for all of us. But before we get into reminiscing, Sheila, could you remind our listeners how you and Brian came to discover Vashon? And big question in my mind, did the Federal Witness Protection Program really have anything to do with your decision to move here?
Well, I don't think I'm going to get into the federal, given the politics of today. It might be too tricky to go completely honestly about that. So we'll skip over that. Sorry, Kevin. And I'll tell you the much more mundane. We lived in New York City for many, many years, but gradually all of our children, including grandchildren, well, initially children and then grandchildren, we lived out here in Seattle. And so we finally decided we needed one great adventure in our life, and we sold our apartment. We looked all around Seattle. We looked up in Bellingham. We looked in Portland. And just nothing seemed right, and we were quite discouraged because we spent the whole summer doing this. And then suddenly one day, Brian said, not me, but Brian said, what about Vashon? And I said, yes. And so we were over here. We found a place. Someone helped us find a little place to stay for a few days. And then it was very sweet because the morning, our son was with us, and he sometimes has a little trouble orienting himself to reality all the time. So we came up. He wanted some breakfast. We didn't know where to go. We saw cars in front of the roastery. We stopped there. We went in. And this is just one of my favorite stories because he was agitated. He wanted a sit-down breakfast. And I kept saying, well, Brian, I don't think we need to go someplace else. His name was Brian, too. We need to go someplace else. But he was agitated. And some woman, and I think it must have been Eva, but maybe not, came out and said, you just go out on the porch and sit down. And it was a beautiful, beautiful August day, morning. So you all know how lovely that is on the porch of the roastery when the sun is shining. And so we sat down, and a few minutes later, out came a beautiful china plate with a beautiful Asian china bowl, and it filled with hot oatmeal. And all around it were little cups of brown sugar and raisins and almonds and maple syrup and butter. And my heavens, that was just so amazing. And who are these people who understood how to take care of us? And then shortly thereafter, Brian was talking to someone and found out that he could get the New York Times here. And so that made it. And so that was our decision, come to Vashon.
Fantastic. Well, of course, we've heard from, you know, Brian so many years about the move to Vashon and the motivations and the family and all. But we'd also like to know a little bit about yourself, Sheila. So what did you do in New York, and what have you most enjoyed about moving to our little island, a little out-of-the-way island?
Okay, so that's a big question. I'll try and be quick. What I did in New York, well, I gave birth to and raised four wonderful children. I did a lot of demonstrating out on the streets and down in Washington, D.C., and all over the place. And gradually, I went back to work. And we had bought a nice little old apartment and an old place up in the country, and I figured I needed to, like, know how to use a hammer or something. Brian wasn't too good at that kind of thing. Sometimes he put up shelves, and then everything fell down, including all our wedding gifts, all crashed down on the floor. So I decided maybe I needed to put up the shelves. So I met a woman who was already, I thought she was a brilliant carpenter, but she only was a one step ahead of me who knew nothing. And we partnered up, and gradually we started a little business called Dovetail Carpentry and Construction. And for 20 years, we moved from hanging shelves to gradually doing, you know, kitchens and libraries and various, and did a lot of the designing ourselves, sometimes with architects, and hired gradually. We wanted all women business, but a lot of women like to take time off to do their ballet class or photography class or whatever they're doing. So we did gradually have to hire both men and women, and we had about 5 or 6 people working with us at ultimately, you know, by the end, towards the end. The beginning, it was very small. And so that was it. We, you know, we incorporated. We paid insurance and Social Security and the works. And then the recession came, and in the early 90s, and for the first time, our phone was not ringing. And so we decided to close the business. I was ready. Finally, my friend Diana was ready, too. And then I became deeply concerned about the issue of climate change, and I started studying permaculture, and ultimately, it's hard to practice permaculture in New York City, so my sister in San Diego had a place that needed attention, and I kind of was out there, and Brian and I commuted for a couple of years back and forth to the city, and then gradually we came to Vashon.
Fantastic. I did hear that you were a general contractor in New York, so thanks for filling in the details on that. Hey, nearly all the Brieflys here today have been on the show with Brian, and all certainly have an impression of Brian. Let's go around the studio, I think in the order in which all became part of the Brown Briefly, to let us know how you came to be on the show and to share your fondest memory of Brian. And Truman, I believe you were here right from the start.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, one of the things, our introductions are always humorous and fun. And that came from Brian. Brian started those introductions. And we all used to just die at what he would come up with the Dixie debutantes and the half a bubble shy of plum carpenter. I mean, those are typical Brian euphemisms. I loved that. But the way we got started, I think Brian started getting bored and hearkening back to his newspaper days, decided he needed to do a news show. And so he began recording a half-hour show called The Brown Briefly, and it was up at Sunrise Ridge Studio, and he originally had one of our other engineers working with him, and the other engineer came to me one day and said, can you go work with this guy? He's wanting me to come up with all these weird sound effects and stuff, and I just don't have time, and I can't do it, and blah, blah, blah. So okay. So I met Brian. Oh, my gosh. Well, he and I hit it off pretty well, and of course, I didn't mind getting the sound effects. And he did lots of weird ones. But anyway, but it was mainly just Brian. It was fully scripted. You know, he had the whole thing written out. And so it was exactly 30 minutes. And finally, one day, he asked me a question. And I had, so I had to turn on a mic and I answered the question. Well, the next thing I know, he's including me in the show. I'm thinking, oh, boy. And not long after that, we started the JBBS studio downtown. And he said, let's move uptown, you know, Brian. And so we moved uptown. And then pretty soon he had to have guests. And I think one of the first guests may have been Gail. And she came on. And as I say about my daughter, she provided color commentary to Brian's story. And Brian always had, by the way, Brian was a big baseball fan. So he always had a baseball segment, which we've not followed up on. We're falling down on that respect. But anyway, that's how we got started. And then slowly more guests started coming. And the next thing you know, we had a panel. And that was it. That's how we started.
All right. And so, Truman, you probably know way better than I who was the next Briefly to come in line after you.
You know, I think it may have been Gail.
I was
pretty sure
thinking
it was
Gail. Yeah. Gail, tell us about your experience.
Well, Brian and I had both worked on the Heart of Vashon performance that was put together back in the, I believe in the night, sometime in the, I'm not sure when it happened, but he was still up at the Sunrise Studio, and he and I hit it off, and he invited me to come up to the Sunrise Studio. Truman was there, and we had a great conversation. And I'm pretty sure what Brian loved about me was I provided the laugh track. So that's how I got started, and he asked me to come on the show on a weekly basis. So it was me, Truman, and Brian and myself for a short period of time, and I'm not sure who came next.
I think it might have been Susan.
Really?
Oh.
Before Lynn?
I think so, Susan. I think so.
Okay. Yeah. You know,
our historian is nodding, so I think you're on.
The historian is nodding. Okay, good. And I don't remember being invited. I don't remember how I wound up here for the Brown Briefly, but I loved it.
Quickly enough through the studio.
Yeah, I think you had to bring something to the studio, and Brian said, "Sit down and start talking."
That's probably what happened. Yeah. And I just loved being in his presence, and I loved the fact that it was an opportunity to speak truth to power, and that he was so gracious about that. He could pull off a wonderful insult without one feeling insulted.
That's right.
And the other thing he did that I enjoyed so much was that we could disagree vehemently, but it was always gracious and always funny. Mm-hmm. So it was a great joy to be part of it all and to be with all the rest of you. Mm-hmm. I loved the feminist perspective from Gail, and I loved the things that Lynn had to say about society and the world. And I love the fact that there were women, and you know, there aren't any right now. But yeah. I just thought I'd drop that.
Okay, yes,
but
there
you
is.
You guys do a wonderful.
We do have Amy Dreher.
Oh, Amy Dreher. Okay,
yes,
good.
We heeded your warning, and we went out and recruited Amy.
Thank you. Thank you. And I do think the rest of you are doing a great job.
Oh, thank you.
I think Brian would be proud.
Let's see. I first met Brian at the Roastery, and I can't remember who introduced us, but we were sitting and talking, and he asked me sort of what I was doing. And at the time, I was teaching a course that dealt with postmodernism, and Brian was just fascinated. So he said, "Well, come on the radio and let's talk about postmodernism," which is sort of like, how do you talk about the world? And it just turned into this amazing sort of conversation that went on for years with Brian. And that's the thing I love most about Brian. He had that reportorial sort of interest in everything.
Yeah.
No matter what it was, he was interested. And he wanted to know what you thought. Mm-hmm. And that was the brilliance of sort of the beginnings of the Brown Briefly. And it's sort of, you know, we try and keep that going, but it's a high bar to reach.
Boy.
You know, Brian really set a high, high bar. And I think he just, maybe Sheila, you can talk a little bit about this, because it's sort of like we knew Brian as Brian in the studio. You knew Brian as Brian in the home. Did the two come together? How did they intermesh? You know, how did they work together? Or
oh,
did they?
I just think that's much too complicated a question for me to answer.
An artful dodge.
Well, listen. I know that Sheila has said that she never listened to the show. So there you go. And that Brian was not progressive enough for her. That's I remember her saying that.
I will say that I, all the way from way, way back, pushed Brian to the left.
There you go.
Yeah. I did.
Fantastic, and he was better for it, I know. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right.
I have to tell you one quick story that Brian told. I won't tell the whole story because it's too long, but about Sheila. When he walked out of his office one day with the head of the department, the owner of the paper, I think.
Henry Luce.
Yeah, Henry Luce, exactly. Henry Luce Jr.
Time Magazine, yeah.
Yeah, Time Magazine. And walked down the street, and there's a big protest, and here's Sheila with a big sign and the kids. And Brian's going, should I cross the street and make like I don't know her? Or what? Because he was a real right-winger, you know, Henry Luce was. And so he finally said, I've just got to bite the bullet and go.
and you know, met them on the road. And here's the little woman. And, you know, and the next day, Henry Luce said to him, spirited woman, your wife. So,
anyway. I remember that story.
Isn't that a great story?
I just want to say that we were in front of St. Patrick's Cathedral, and the cardinal had just, or whatever he was, had just become vicar general of the United States Army, something like that. And the sign I was carrying, and I had, it was on my stroller. I had a kid, one kid on each side of the stroller and one kid in the stroller. And the sign in the stroller up against the kid's knees was, "I will not genuflect to genocide." That was one of my great moments. I like that.
Yeah. All right. As we continue our tour of Briefly History, all I recall vaguely is that either Lynn invited Michael or Michael invited Lynn. Okay, Lynn is saying that the latter is true. Michael, so you must have been next.
I guess I was. Well, this is terrible. I can't remember if... I think this happened after I met Brian. I met him at a party. He's the only other person I've ever seen wearing a Brooklyn Dodgers baseball cap. And we migrated together in the middle of the party and just... It was one of those things that... Well, I've met a few people in my life where I've walked away thinking, I'm going to be friends with this person for the rest of my life. And Brian was one of them, of that, you know, two or three folks. And then Sheila, I'm talking with her at the same party. She was a contractor, and I'm carpenter. So it's like, holy cow, this is, you know, it's kismet. It's fate. It's. And then I wrote a letter into to the Beachcomber, and Brian really liked it and said, come in. And so there we go. Here I was. Here I am.
And he loved your sound effects. That was
well,
one of
you
the,
know, yeah. Gosh, I'm out of practice on my sound effects and stuff. I'm still singing. So,
well, yes, we had an example of that. Mm-hmm. Just did in the theater just last year, didn't we?
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, you and Lynn, who you invited onto the show. So.
Yeah, we did some fancy dancing too.
That's
but
right.
that was great. I don't want to throw in here. I know from my own various marital excursions and experiences the best of my wives. Cynthia, oh, that's not fair to the other two. But anyway,
but
boy, that's okay. There's so many stories there.
I can feel the ice cracking beneath my feet.
I'm saying, go on.
I'm trying to stammer out here that I know that Brian would not have been Brian as I knew him and as we all knew him without a really wonderful woman to be his partner in life. And
here.
And I think we've all been, I feel just so blessed by all of that.
Yeah. Excellent.
All right. And since you invited Lynn to the show, do you want to segue over to Lynn Kerrigan?
Heck yeah. Yeah. I don't remember that either. It's this old age. I remember inviting her, but I don't remember exactly the circumstances. We knew each other from singing. Lynn, take it away.
Lynn, fill us in.
It was that. We knew each other through singing.
Yeah.
You know, both of us like kind of gospel-y stuff at the Church of the Holy Spirit. But mostly what I liked about you and then Brian, because you introduced me to him, I think, at the Progressive Alliance you know, gatherings that he had in his house. This was right before the 2016 election, so things were getting very interested. And you and I have always had very fun, wide-ranging conversations with a huge dash of humor thrown in. And so I met Brian and was so entranced with his storytelling and his wide range of experience and his savoir-faire. And Sheila, I remember you saying to me once, well, you guys just lionized Brian, and he was just a guy. But, you know, he knew how to include people and bring people into his world and come into ours. And I had just retired as a social work professor from the UW, and so Gail had just left. Gail was moving up to the San Juans, and you guys were thinking about another woman coming on.
I recall that now, yeah. And
so
Brian talking about that, and I said, I think I know someone.
Yeah. Yeah, so I appreciated that and just really adored Brian for his sort of social awareness and his experience with the sort of New York scene. And I, being a social work professor, really had that sort of world view about social justice and kind of structural settings that either promoted or discounted that, and wanted to contribute as a female perspective and as a social justice person. But Brian liked the fact that I played semi-pro softball as a girl in one of the leagues of their own type. You know, you travel, but you don't get paid. And he refused to use the name of my actual team, which was the Midway Debutantes, for being somewhere midway to Atlanta from Decatur, Georgia, where I grew up. And my sister's team, which he didn't know, was the Dixie Darlings. Well, he liked the way Dixie Debutantes sounded. And I could never tell my sister to listen to the show because she would have been furious that he portmanteaued by name. But the thing that I liked best about Brian was exactly what you mentioned, Bruce, was that we were really able to get deep into ideas quickly because we trusted each other not to react badly. And I really enjoyed that, because that dialogue across difference in our current polarized society has really gotten lost. And I always felt that, I don't want to say we were a role model, but it was a sanctuary kind of place where we could do that and really be interested in how we thought about things. And I had a great time while I was here, trying to be funny in Brian's and Michael's tradition and, you know, really enjoying the group. So I really appreciated it. And then I had to sort of bow out in about 2021 when I had some medical problems. And my memory was we invited Susan back.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that?
Yeah,
to
we did.
Fill in, because Gail left about that time, and we didn't not want to have a female perspective on the team. So you had a second round, I guess.
Sure, she did.
And always willing to offer my opinion.
Of course.
Without pay.
We picked her up on waivers.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad the opinions are flowing freely. It is Vashon Mori Island, after all. So I think I was next in the lineup.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I do recall being invited after I retired in 2015, and then a catastrophe election occurred in 2016. I remember getting involved, right, in political activism. And I got invited by another individual on the island to go to this Our Revolution Vashon meetings at this sort of not out of the way place, but a little bit down a dirt driveway. You had to make sure to take the proper left-hand turn, and then you had to sort of carefully find a place to park so you didn't tread on any plants or knock over any trees. And that was my first introduction to the home of Sheila and Brian Brown, sitting around with a group of other like-minded folks, contemplating what we do next, which sort of harkens back to, you know, our situation today. But it never was really super clear. I don't recall, like, did I get a phone call, an email, or exactly what the content of an invitation was. But I figure maybe I showed up, I spoke up a few times, and I look like I could actually put words together in a logical, you know, way. And maybe Sheila had something to do with saying, you need that guy on the show. Because I was right there in the left wing of the political spectrum and looking forward to doing more. So it's been, for me, just a tremendous opportunity. Brian is a bright light that shines today, in my view, and sets examples that really, I think, support all of us in terms of how we work in community, how we are inquisitive, how we seek information, how we validate others' opinions and views. It's really also important that we do that and continue to do that. And I love the word sanctuary and the fact that we can strive to be a model for, you know, how we have intelligent dialogue on issues that are really important to people's lives. So hopefully we can continue that.
And can I say one other thing about your coming on? Is we had kind of, I'd say, evolved into a storytelling council of elders was the way I kind of felt about it. It wasn't so much reminiscing as it was having gotten to a place where many of us were newly retired and sort of fleeing. I was certainly fleeing, you know, active social work all the time, every day. And you were younger and brought that spark of energy for doing something in the community to really face what we were dealing with and not just talk about it, but do something. And so you brought, I think, a very valuable set of skills at the time that we needed it. And so it shifted the group a little bit to being more local and more focused.
You know, Lynn, one of the things I remember and admired about you is that you always dug down deep into these topics. And you know, we'd be up there kind of superficial, and Lynn would come in and just, you know, I mean, go right for the heart. And we'd all kind of go, ooh, yeah, you know. But
she did research there.
She did. She knew what she was talking about, you know. And so I always really, really admired that and respected your point of view.
That's important coming from you because we had the most, I think, ideological difference that we got to enjoy thinking about
together.
So thank you.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I will say before we go over to Craig that one of the taglines that came to mind during that time was complaint without action is compliance.
Ooh, I like that.
Yes. Yeah.
But Craig joined us and I recall you, I believe we invited you in to comment on a certain topic when we had our small talk segment was up and running and decided that we really should extend an invitation to keep on. So, what did it look like from your end?
You thought you needed a lawyer on the
possibly. The rate we were going. Even more now.
Yeah. Well, I am the least and appropriately last in this august group of Brieflies. I had a morning scramble show for several years before I came on. And you're right, I was invited. It was some constitutional law issue, if I recall. And after the Kevin and Truman and Bruce drove the women away, I came on. And as a matter of fact, I have to my credit, at right about this time last year, we were talking about our New Year's resolutions, or predictions, excuse me, our New Year's predictions. And I predicted that we would soon have a woman back on the panel. And we did. We had a little chiding in that regard from some former Brieflies. but we're thrilled. Amy, we're sad she's not with us today, but she'll be back next week. But she is a great addition to the Brieflies, Amy Dreher, who's involved in everything. On the island,
he's
a fire commissioner, and you know the ferries and everything else. But you know, I always loved the Brieflies show. I was not on the Brown Brieflies when Brian was here, but I used to listen to it religiously, and I thought it was the premier show on the Voice of Vashon, and I still do. But I had the great privilege of sitting next to Brian and Sheila at a wedding. It was at the late, great Opal Montague's home, one of the original grannies and founders of Grannies and the Health Center and whatnot. And her granddaughter, Ashley Montague, was being had her wedding there. And I was talking with Sheila and with Brian, and that's the first time I had heard the story, which Truman made reference to a moment ago, because I was curious, Sheila, what you thought of Brian's show with Brian sitting right next to you, and you didn't hesitate.
What did I say?
You said I never listened to it. I thought that's a good way to keep your husband humble.
Well, it wasn't just about that. You know, my life didn't involve sitting. I didn't have time to just be in front, sit there for 45 minutes or whatever. Anyway,
But
you had him at home. You could talk to him. Well, you know, you didn't need to listen to the show.
Whatever. I should have listened. I'll start listening now. It looks very good. Sounds very good. Very good show.
Yeah. So it was a real pleasure, and I really got a sense for the way Sheila and Brian interacted and his sense of humor and whatnot. So it was a real honor to be brought back or be brought onto the show with the Brieflies and every week. It's a great and I'm happy we expanded the show to a full hour because it never seemed like enough time to give our guests their due and to have regular guests and to switch off with the Truman Show where we sort of returned to free association. It's a great tradition. It's a great show that Brian began, and I'm proud to be a part of it.
You know, you mentioned that going to an hour when we started. You know, as I mentioned, Brian first recorded the show as a half-hour show. And then once we moved to the JBBS studio and people started walking by and seeing what was happening, Brian said, you know, we're just not getting enough done. We got to expand this thing. Well, I had the show right before.
Yeah.
So I asked Molly, well, what do you think, Molly? Should we give him a little piece of our time? And she finally agreed. And so we gave him 15 minutes. So then the show was 45 minutes long. And as would happen, as the panel grew and the discussion got more involved, we finally said, we got to go to an hour. That's all there is to it. We just got to go to an hour. And so I looked at Molly again, and she goes, okay, we'll give up another. So we gave up another 15 minutes of our show.
We like to hear ourselves talk.
Yeah, right, yeah. No, listen, you know, truly, I find that the hour goes by pretty quickly. And it did, it always has, because the topics are interesting enough, and there's enough opinions that, you know, it just goes quickly. And I think, by the way, the Brown Briefly is one of the most or highly rated on the station of KVSH. We get the most feedback of any of our shows.
The most listeners.
And the most listeners, exactly. Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting. So,
What if I can jump in, just one of the things I thought was fascinating about Brian is that the show always flowed smoothly. I mean, it's like Brian made it feel effortless. He spent lots of time sort of scripting it for himself. And then finally we said, well, let's share the script so we sort of have some ideas of what's going on. But he sort of just led us through conversations. And it was kind of the magical part of it that he brought to the show. And also, I mean, you guys have been with Voice of Vashon a long time. I mean, Brown Briefly and that kind of conversational, I mean, that sort of fostered a lot of other shows very similar to it, The Clatch. And, you know, you think of all the other shows on Voice of Vashon that have sort of grown out of the seed that Brian planted. And I think it's a significant part of the Voice of Vashon story.
It's now Talk Tuesday. And that was truly all of Brian's doing.
Yeah, that was. And I'm big, of course, on journalism and news and information on Voice of Vashon. So I was really thrilled that we developed Talk Tuesday. I had my Real Talk show, which was a half-hour show, mm-hmm. Interview conversation, and now a Vashon Minute. And it did grow out of his casual and charming approach to journalism.
Yeah.
Just human and engaging, very engaging.
You were the Stephen Colbert following Jon Stewart.
yeah, there you go. There you go.
Wow.
You know,
that's a high compliment.
Thank you.
One of my favorite stories about Brian and that kind of that inquisitive nature. He was talking about being, I think it was in Aspen, where he was on vacation skiing, and he and his son, I believe, wasn't Sheila, if you remember.
Yeah.
And he's walking across, or he's walking down the street, and he sees Andy Williams, you know, the singer, running across the street to the police station. And of course, you know, his newspaper hackles went off, and he raced across to find out what was going on. That was the when his former wife had shot the guy. I can't remember now the guy's name.
Spider Savage.
Spider Savage. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. it was a great blow to us who were skiers. It was a terrible tragedy, but
But Brian was there, and he called the New York office and said, "I'm on scene. I got the story. You know, I got the lead for the next one." And anyway, he was there. He's the guy who covered that, which I thought was really interesting.
Spider Savage has a connection with Vashon because he was a K2 representative.
K2, that's right.
You know, he was on Vashon a number of times. We got photographs of him with K2 skis and at the ski factory. Right. So there, you know. Vashon has these tentacles that go out in the world in all kinds of ways that we just don't realize.
Yeah.
You know what that makes me think of is that one of the great qualities, I think, of the Briefly, everyone here shares with Brian, which is that eminent sense of curiosity about other people and the willingness to leap in, both intellectually and kindly as a group. You know, you really have to have the ability to fall back a little as an ego and be interested in what other people think and what other people are doing. And he did that in spades.
Yep. Yes, well, so we definitely appreciate all these reflections. And that is something that I think we all want to have a chance to share, is what, as we think back to that time spent with Brian, what is that most endearing memory? And maybe, Gail, you could help us contribute your thoughts.
Well, my most endearing memory of Brian is during a year-long experiment that I did where I lived without a car on Vashon.
Oh, so that's right.
I was really interested in seeing, like, is it possible, you know, for me living down, you know, one of Vashon's long hills that I lived at the bottom of. I had to get up out of there, and I was living without a car. And had to get my groceries and had to get to my kids and had to get to appointments and had to get to the Brown Briefly on Tuesdays. And so I would hitchhike if I didn't, if I had missed the bus or just because I thought it was a little bit interesting to maybe meet interesting people. And so I would hitchhike from the North End. And when Brian heard about that, he started hitchhiking some of the time from the South End. Sure. So he and I would meet at the studio and talk about the ride we'd found that morning. That's so right. That's probably, I have many lovely memories of him. I truly adored him as a person. And such deep kindness.
All right, awesome. Thank you, Gail, for sharing that. Who'd like to jump in?
I had just hanging around. I'm with you, Gail. I just loved hanging around with them, picking them up in the morning, bringing them to the show, and going and having coffee and stuff. But if I had to pick a sort of a highlight, we took in some ball games together, and the Mariners, the hapless Mariners, were playing the Baltimore Orioles. Hisashi Iwakuma was pitching, and about we were in our usual cheap seats out in the left center field. And we're watching the game, and about the fifth or sixth inning, I nudged Brian and said, "Look at the scoreboard if you haven't lately." And Brian glanced up because we're both kind of keeping half an eye on it. Holy cow, the Iwakuma had a no-hitter going, so of course we didn't say anything about it. Neither one of us
didn't want to jinx it, right?
Neither one of us said a word about, "Oh, he's working on a no-hitter." No, we said not. So then we just sat there with bated breath. And nudging each other, and final pitch was made. He'd thrown a no-hitter. The whole ballpark went crazy, and that was a swell time. That was really lovely. But
what I love is that you didn't say anything. That I could just see Brian doing that, you know, with that look on his face, like, oh my gosh, you know. Yeah,
well, and of course Brian was a heck of a good pitcher himself, and knew better than to jinx the whole thing.
I'll do a quick follow-on in baseball. And I do not know where this episode occurred, but I remember there was some conversation. And it was like, "Brian, come and join us for something." And he said, "I would, but the Mariners need me so badly right now."
That's right.
That's funny.
What an incredible mix of curiosity, grace, and magic in one human being. Just, it's great to sit here and remember who he was and all that he was about. I don't remember any specific incidents. I just remember it being such great fun to be here, to be with him, to look forward to what we were going to talk about together.
You know, one of the other things that I got to participate in that I really was thrilled about at the Vashon Community Care, we had a fundraiser that we did called Telling Stories, where we had, quote, elders of the community come and speak and just to tell stories. And Brian did one of those. And he was hilarious. I mean, he would get started telling a story, and I would kind of look over at Sheila because she would be kind of cringing, I think, because like, oh no, what's coming next, you know? But was just hilarious and so insightful. In fact, that story I just was talking about where he ran into Sheila at the protest, that came out of that Telling Stories talk that he did. But anyway, it was great.
Well, in fact, I think if you go to the Voice of Vashon website, you can find that Telling Stories,
you can.
Episode, so you can watch the video of it. And it's a kick to watch it. I mean, Brian was a real entertainer, as well as a news person, as well as a deeply thoughtful guy and a baseball fan. But he really, I mean, he held that audience in his palm of his hand. It was really interesting. And so I suggest if you haven't seen it, it's worth going on the Voice of Vashon website and taking a look.
Yeah.
Yes, but it went on too long. And I kept saying to myself, Truman, give him the hook.
I've got one to follow both of you two, because Brian was such a great storyteller, and we shared the Irish connection.
Oh, yeah.
And so this wasn't about an incident here, but it was about a story that he told that had me in the palm of his hand for sure and involved you, because he was talking about liking to go visit in Ireland and really enjoying the pub scene and all of that, and how on one of his trips he found some new town and, of course, had to find the pub immediately. And Sheila somehow dropped him off or something. I don't think you were there until you came to pick him up, where he had ingratiated himself at the bar and with all the pub people. And she found him standing up on one of the tables holding forth with his storytelling and his drinking and his, you know, Irish fulminant joy of life.
That was the evening we were down in the Dingle Peninsula, and it was the evening that Nixon had agreed to step down. Brian decided, maybe as a journalist or as an American or as a I don't know what, he decided that he needed to get on top of the table and assure all of the folks there that there would be an orderly transition of power. And that's what was going on. And I was outside in the rain with four children and the baby person. And finally, I left him in the bar and went up to the mountaintop to go to bed, where we had found a place to sleep for the night. And I don't know how he ever got up there, but he did show up at some point. But I know he had very, very bad hangover the following day. I know that.
I love that you don't care how he got there.
He was an adult, you know. He needed to manage.
Oh, yeah, goodness. I'm sure he had 30 new friends.
Yeah, well, you know, he was on assignment to Northern Ireland, right?
Oh, and he had been previous, not at this point, but previous. He had been, yes. Yeah, I had picked him up at the airport when he came down from Northern Ireland. But I just want to say my little story about Brian, which is very close to my heart. He was in hospice. He was in a hospital bed. The family was around, and there were two kind of different things that happened. One was that he had us all cracked up laughing so much. One was that he had collected various pictures or whatever and, you know, things that are handed out at people's funerals or whatever over the years. And there was a big bulletin board on the other side of the room. And he decided he wanted to get over the, bring those things down, and that he had collected the photos and end of life things, pieces of paper. And we went through them, and he was so hilarious about who was allowed to get up on his bulletin board and who no. He was not allowed to put up on that bulletin board. He did not. Certain people, no, no, no. But others, yes. And that was very funny. And then the other thing that he did that made us all laugh, he got someone came in, one of the kids, our kids came in with his grammar school yearbook. And there was a photo of all the children when they were like 10 years old, and they were in their pretend outfits that you wear to play football, but none of them had real outfits, and they were all made up. He knew the names of every one of those kids in that photo from way, way back, you know, 80 years ago. Brian was 85 at this time, so that gives you the sense of how good his memory was. And he knew the names, and he had something funny to say about every single one of those 20 little boys on the baseball team. And it was very, very precious how humorous he was all the way through his dying until maybe the last week or so. So,
what an exceptional human being. What a model for all of us. Indeed. May we all go laughing.
Yeah.
Right. So, Sheila, a question for you, Sheila. So, did he have you laughing on your first date? Tell us about how you met.
Good question.
How about the first date?
That's a little complicated, the first date.
But, that's what we want to hear.
Yeah. I don't want to get into that. That was there was another side of, well, what Brian did have a bad habit, which is he was always late.
No.
Always late. And on the first date, we went to meet his friend, and we were very, very late. We were supposed to help the friend who was taking the paint off the side of a boat, and we were going to go and help that friend and then go out for a meal or something. And that friend got very angry at Brian. And they say that if there's trouble in a marriage, one of the things that aspect shows up on the very first date. I've heard that said. And there were many times when Brian was always late.
But you stuck with it.
Yeah, he had other attributes.
He was a sexy man. Yeah, I'll tell you, I've never told an 80-year-old before that, wow, you better be glad that you're married.
Yeah.
Well, you know, one thing that did come to mind, most of us anyway, just saw the producing the Brown Briefly, right? We didn't see much of the behind the scenes. Right. But I have heard that there was a lot of deliberation that went into, you know, actually producing this show, bringing the magic that Brian brought. I know, Sheila, I think you may have already commented on this, but what was it like around the home front, you know, as Brian was, you know, preparing to get ready to come in and share all that wisdom with the community here?
Brian has had a little room that was his office, so to speak, and it was just very completely covered with newspapers, magazines, cutouts. It was a mess. It was really a mess. And I try never to go into that, but that was his room. And so, I mean, I just didn't get too involved. It was his baby, just as my planting and growing and all the things I do outdoors. Excuse me, that was my baby. So we were kind of separate that way. But the big thing is on the day of Tuesday morning, Brian did not like to get out of bed. So my saying, you have to get out of bed, is getting late. And then getting him out the door where Michael was out there with his car to pick him up. And getting him out the door and into that car. Over and done with. I've done my duty. So that's how it was.
I was in that office several times because Brian could not get that darn printer to work. And he would call and say, I'm trying to print up the script, and I can't get this printer to work. And so I don't know how many times I was up there fiddling with that stupid printer. But we always got it working, and uh-huh. it was always worth the effort because of the script. But.
I got to throw in, that warms my heart. Cynthia, there's one room in the house that she will not enter, and that's my what passes for my office. It's somewhere under it, the piles is a desk, and I always have room to do things. Yeah. Then it also warms my heart. Brian is a fellow left-hander and someone of Irish descent, hating to get out of bed, chronically late. It's just like he was my long-lost brother or something.
One reason that Brian didn't like to get out of bed was because I don't think he ever went to sleep until about 1 o'clock in the morning. He always had at least 6 books on his night table, and he would read more or less, I don't know exactly, but a chapter from each book, which I thought was bizarre, personally. But that was his style. So he was up very, very late reading all his different books that he read. Yeah,
that does not surprise me at all, because as we've said repeatedly, Brian had this thirst for knowledge for everything. I mean, there was no topic that was off limits with him. I mean, he loved everything to learn about it. And I think that's one of the reasons he liked bringing in the people onto the panel, because they brought different viewpoints and different ideas. And he loved that. He loved to throw out a topic and go, wow, where's this going to go? You know? Anyway, so I respected that of him. Gail.
I just wanted to add, I think that was one of the most endearing things to me, that as a woman, it's very rare to find a man who's interested in your opinion. I think that was just such a fantastic offering that he gave to me every week, you know, and I just wanted to throw that in, how much that meant to be acknowledged for one's intelligence, for one's opinions and ideas. And Brian offered that to women, which is a remarkable thing, particularly given his generation. But
Well, I also do want to say that he loved the way you laughed, Gail.
Like I said, I was the soundtrack for
it. He loved it.
Well, maybe the show wouldn't be complete without just us recalling when Brian told us that there was going to be a change. He wanted to get together at the hardware store restaurant. He said, there's an issue that I really need to share with you, and I think it might affect the show. And he gathered us all together. He was very insistent that we all show up. And he told a story that he had, usually in his pockets, he carried around these medications, but also these batteries for his hearing aids, I believe, if the story went right. And,
that
he was, you know, always sort of just reaching into his pocket and, you know, taking a pill when he needed to. And he was afraid that he had this lower abdominal pain, that maybe he had swallowed one of these batteries from his hearing aids, and that he had to go and see the doctor. And this was all a charade around a real, you know, medical condition, which I think at the time he knew was going to end his life.
Well, I mean, the way it actually developed was, it was Thanksgiving, and he had a pain, and he thought he'd swallowed his batteries, and so we called Poison Control, and so Poison Control talked to us quite a while, on and off over a course of about a day, and they were great. And then finally they said, I think you need to go to the hospital and have a thing done, an x-ray done. And so we went, that was when we went, and he had an ultrasound, I guess. And the woman came in and said, I'm sorry, it's not your hearing aids. You have a tumor. And so that was it. So that was the day after Thanksgiving of that day, 2019. Yeah.
Well, I have to say that... after that, we were all, of course, hopeful that the show would continue. And, of course, the show has continued. But some days after that, I was at the roastery, and right as you walk in the front door of the roastery, there's that little alcove to the right. And people gather there, you know, to chat. And Brian was one of them. And the look of joy on his face as he was holding forth, and everybody was just mesmerized. And I remember, Sheila, that you mentioned to me that one of the things that he said to you was, "I will miss the mirth."
Ah, yeah.
Mm. I'll miss the mirth. So,
and so the life of Brian.
Indeed.
Yes. So next week, I think, Craig, are you hosting or... Bruce is hosting?
It's the Truman Show.
Oh, yes. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
I think there'll be a few national topics to talk about.
I think
about
we
next
have a
week.
Few. I think we'll have a few. Yeah.
Okay. Well, for Sheila, Bruce, Craig, Susan, and Lynn, and Michael, and Truman, and myself, Kevin, we really appreciate. And for Gail, who's with us on Zoom, and Amy, and Abstentia, we really appreciate you listening today to the Brown Briefly Retrospective. We hope you will tune in next week and join us then. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.